Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you guys hanging out with us. Of course, we like to hang out other places with us as well. And Don, where would that be?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook, like us, please. See, I tricked you on that one, Ava.
You did. I was ready, though.
I know. I figured you were. We have cool interactive site. That Valley Outdoors website's pretty cool. You know, the other thing we don't talk enough about is the fact that if you miss a show or you want to listen to other shows, we are streaming on there.
We're podcasting.
Podcast, yep.
Yep.
And you can...
They're all on there.
Ton of shows. There's some descriptions on there as well, and you can...
If you're looking for a particular show. Plus, yep. I would suggest a lot of the... We have contacts with a lot of the companies that we've talked to over the years.
And we have links to them.
Links to them. So if you're looking for them, I just had a gentleman call the other day. I was looking for an air ride. I said, here's the easy way. Just go to our website.
Airwave and punch it up.
Yep.
Airwave. Very cool. You know, in my travels... Don, with working with Shero, I've been lucky enough to be out East Coast quite a bit.
Yep.
And driving some pretty cool boats.
Yeah.
And striper fishing out there is a big deal. I was fortunate to be able to do some striper fishing in, we weren't successful. We only be able to fish for an hour and 20 minutes, but nonetheless, it's a blast. And they're big. They can be quite big. And a lot of people fish from shore.
What's big?
45 inches.
That's big.
Yeah. 40-some inches. So, yeah. They'll be up to that. Not to say that they're all that size.
Right.
You know, but, and they vary in size. They've got a lot of different sizes you can catch. But people fish from shore. I mean, it's a big sport out east. Well, in this particular scenario... The New York Environmental Conservation Officers, they have had busy time catching and dealing with people that decide to not appropriately catch fish or over appropriately catching fish.
You mean those that don't know the limit?
That could be. Yep. Over the last couple of months, officers have obtained over 90 illegally possessed fish. Some they hide in the sand, some they hide behind rocks and logs fishing from shore, right? And there's one other method that they found that they were trying to hide them. And the story goes as this. Uniformed and undercover officers hit up striped bass fishing hotspots on an overnight patrols. One unsuspecting angler, unknowingly, fishing next to an undercover officer, reeled in a couple stripers and kept them. The undercover officer called the two other full, clothed or appropriately dressed officers, and they ticketed the angler for possession of out-of-season fish. A few weeks later, a group of anglers, they were filleting striped bass, and they found them. The fish were confiscated. The anglers issued a ticket and advised that they could keep fishing but must release any striped bass. The officers left, but observed the group from afar, and sure enough, they continued to catch and keep stripers, hiding them about 20 yards away in the rocks. The conservation officers returned and ticketed the anglers again. This time, they could pay as much as $2,500 in fines. Not
slow learners.
Slow. In this other situation, okay, so this is building up to what goes on. Conservation offers another situation, watch multiple people catch and keep stripers to help find where the perpetrators were stashing their fish. They called for backup, and they brought a canine. And apparently the dog can sniff out fish. Alerted the officers to multiple fish buried in the sand, squirreled away behind logs and hiding in brush piles. That night, they recovered 16 striped bass, all between 25 and 35 inches. Big fish. However, Don, the most creative hiding spot was discovered this period of time when the conservation officer investigated a report of three anglers keeping striped bass on this particular bridge out east. When the officers confronted the anglers, they denied possessing any fish. They searched the area and found seven stripers hidden inside traffic cones across the bridge.
They're getting creative.
They issued tickets for single illegal possession of fish during a closed season and failure to carry marine registry. Unless you like your fish bass chowder seasoned with asphalt or road dirt, it's difficult to understand why someone even want to eat fish that's been chilling in a traffic cone for the afternoon.
Oh, my.
Difficult to understand why someone would be poaching game species out of season to begin with, but tough to have a good eater fish from away when you have a bass melt on your mind. Yeah, Don, it's crazy.
Have you ever had Straber?
Yeah, I have.
Is it pretty good table?
Very good. Yep, very good. It's very good. The legal bass length to keep is 23 to 28 inches, and it's one fish per angler per day. So these guys were pushing the limit of limits.
Your limit is one per day?
One per day. So, needless to say, Don?
Got spendy. I'm guessing it got very spendy.
And they got photos of it with the fish inside the cone of the traffic cone.
Well, maybe they got a family to feed. You know, I don't know. Where was this at?
Out east.
Well, east is about 4,000 miles.
It's basically going to be in the northeast.
Northeast. New York area?
Yeah.
Massachusetts?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I just... It's not worth it.
No.
It's not worth it.
Are you considering you're going to pay upwards of $2,500 to a fine of that? I don't think so.
Yeah, you get the wrong judge and it could get per fish.
That could be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would not be a good thing. Out of Michigan, Marquette, Michigan, the story goes as follows. $3 with two bullets. Gentleman from Howard City had a terrific firearms deer season in Michigan. He ended up with three adult bucks after firing just two bullets out of his 6.5 Creedmoor.
I was just going to ask what type of a rifle he had.
The pair of bucks he got with one bullet on Thanksgiving morning had their antlers locked. The largest of those deer had non-typical 12-point antlers with a drop tine. That's the one he shot. Smaller 7-pointer that had the 12-pointer locked up in his antlers was already dead.
Oh.
He guessed that the bigger buck broke the 7-pointer's neck and had been trying to dislodge himself from the carcass for days. Although taking the locked bucks was the highlight of his almost 20 years of deer hunting, his 2024 season got off to a terrific start on top of it. Although taking the locked bucks was probably one of the best moments I'd ever... If you ever did that, Don, would you not be like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen?
I mean, I've seen plenty of videos of that. I've never seen it in nature, no.
Yeah. On November 15th, he shot one of his best bucks up until the previous time, a trophy 14-pointer. He shot it from the same blind he got the locked bucks from. Apparently, he's got a hot stand.
Yeah, no kidding.
The 12-pointer he got on Thanksgiving had larger antlers than his opening day buck. Shooting the 12-point thing was a mercy kind of thing, in his opinion. I was by myself and going to try and wrangle a deer apart, but he figured he'd get hurt. Yeah, no kidding. You ever seen people that try to do that?
Yep.
Oh, not a good thing. He surmised the 12-pointer had been unable to eat anything for days. It was tangled with the dead buck's antlers, but it was able to drink water. He said it was filled with water, his stomach was. And he got a mild walk to the swamp where he hunts on private property, hunts in an old blind, had been there forever from his great-grandfather, which is super cool. And it's about 15 feet higher than the surrounding area. And
do you know if he's going to have him mounted?
I don't think he was. He said, let's see, 10:30 in the morning is when he got it. He got the 14-pointer. A lot of action that morning. Watched Big Buck for a while, unable to get the shot. Was chasing a doe. No, looks like, he's not going to get
him
mounted.
He had a good season, though.
Yeah, are you? I mean, can you imagine?
No. But again, it's much simpler when you got that type of a rifle.
Yeah,
I mean, just
well. So then, the other thing you'd have to do would be you would have to contact the game warden to verify that
the one was already
the one
deceased.
Was passed.
Yeah,
and That's a struggle. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, it's. I don't think it'd be that big of a struggle to get a hold of the game warden, though. He could see that they're locked up.
Oh, yeah. Well, the problem is you've got to get them out of the woods.
In it and the other one doesn't.
You got to get
them
out.
Well, I'd take him out to the site.
What's that?
I would take a game warden out to the site where he was shot.
Yeah. So there's a question for you, Don.
Yeah.
So if you're in a situation where something like that happens,
mm-hmm.
you're back in the woods, and let's say it's getting dark. You want to get that deer out of the woods.
Yep.
What are you going to do?
Tag it. Take a picture.
Yeah. Leave it.
Well, you're going to have to if you're going to have the warden verify that it was a legal tag.
So here's the point.
Yep.
I'm wondering if you were tag it, yes, obviously, and you photograph it with the other deer attached to it. You have it on your phone, yes, and then you simply break it apart. The other deer isn't going to do any good. You could let the CO know that there's the deer on this particular spot, and you give them a coordinate of where it's at. Would that not be, because a lot of times you
probably,
I would not be comfortable leaving a deer out. Let's say it's, you know, warmer temperature. That would be not a good situation to be.
No, it wouldn't, you know. It would depend upon the time of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was cold out, it depends upon, you could probably call the warden from where you're at.
That's what I'm thinking.
And find out if he's available to come at the moment or it'd be the next day.
And I think the other thing, too, is you could verify the fact that, look, this is the situation, and send him a picture of the deal.
Yep.
I think that would probably, like how we problem solved this one.
Yep. I think that would be the right thing to do, because if
I had that happen when I was fishing offshore here in Red Wing. There was an eagle, bald eagle, that had hit the bridge and was laying right. I didn't notice it until I started fishing from the shore. I wandered down and looked and went, oh crap. So I called Tyler.
Yep.
And I said, hey, this is where it's at. There's a bald eagle. It looks like it hit the bridge. And so, but those are tough situations. It's like, how to best deal with it.
Well, that's all you can do is call the authorities, the conservation folks, and they'll do what they need to do.
Well, so here's another one that actually happened to me. We were out fishing the river, and a buddy of mine, he's since passed, and he loved fishing, so I took him out fishing as much as I could. And we were down at the head of the lake and hooked a absolute monster. Well, and I saw it was a
how many branches
carp.
Did they have on it?
No,
oh, it was a carp. Okay.
But it was looking to me like it was the bad ones.
Oh, like an Asian carp?
Yeah. And of course, he's like, break it up. I said, no, we got to find out. This is one we need to find out if this is a invasive or not, because it's very possible that it is.
Right.
So we got it in the boat. I took a photo of it at multiple angles, and I called the Lake City Fisheries Department, and I said, I need to talk to somebody. I've got a fish that I don't know if I should release. If you want to have it, whatever the case is. So I sent him the photos of it. We had a conversation about it, and he's like, nope. You're good to let that one go because it's not an invasive. And I'm like, okay, cool. But, you know, having those situations, if you do have an invasive, that's a key piece to a lot of what's going on research-wise, especially in these rivers and lakes that you maybe didn't think you had invasives, and that type of thing comes up. So,
and I think the DNR appreciates knowing if you do, in fact, have an invasive.
Oh, yeah, very true.
Yes.
Yeah, very true. Very true. I just was surprised on this. I like the fact that we have some good news that's in the news. Minnesotans overwhelmingly stood up for the outdoors again in the recent election. A report came out that there's several amendments that came up, but the Minnesotans supported the outdoors agenda. There was an amendment to rededicate lottery profits. Lottery is obviously a big money thing in the state of Minnesota as well as other states. And they offered agreed to rededicate the lottery profits to the Environmental and Natural Resource Trust Fund.
What percentage?
77.5% of the state voters said yes.
Yeah, that's how much it won by. How much of the profits?
Don, you always ask the questions that I just...
You haven't got there yet?
No.
I think it's either 60 or it's 40.
Yeah. It doesn't say in this particular report, so unfortunately. But nonetheless, the key piece to the 250,000 more yes votes than no and highest percentage votes since 1996, which is pretty cool. 7% of the voters said yes in the state lottery. Amendment 2, that's the right to hunt and fish, and the legacy sales tax dedication. So that's awesome. And again, it's across the Midwest. I've seen a lot of positives coming out of Michigan and Wisconsin as well, North Dakota, South Dakota. Overwhelmingly, that there's support. Michigan's having a tough time trying to get the legislature to look at increasing license fees, which is some mixed bag criticism. Maybe it's not as much as, or shouldn't be as much as they're recommending, but it's kind of like Minnesota. They haven't changed a lot of things in a long time, and they finally did. Whether it's limits on Mississippi River haven't changed in 50 years. They needed to be changed, and it's for the better.
Yep.
So a lot of those things come up, and well, many times it'll be something to keep in mind.
Say, I did see a story here recently, and I don't know, I have a lot of details on it. Maybe we can cover more of it later, but I've seen that the bald eagles are getting the avian flu.
Look at that one.
And we'll have to see if we can find out more information on that, because that would be a real, real sad deal. I think that came out of International Falls.
Oh, so, okay. We'll have to look into it. Obviously, Bald Eagle Center is down here in down the Wabasha area, Minnesota.
Yep, National Eagle Center.
Yeah, we'll check it out. Well, thanks for checking us out. And we are the Valley Outdoors for Don, Ava, and myself, Eric. We will be here next week once again. Be careful. Have a great, safe weekend on the snow, on the ice, and in the field, wherever it might be. Certainly enjoy that. And a fantastic looking forward to a 2025. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.